Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
All right. Good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence. I'm Greg Williams. I'm right here in an undisclosed location. I can't tell you where I'm at or I'd have to kill you. But I tell you what, you're going to hear some background noise, but I'm just so excited. I wanted to do, when I got our guest, the email that said that they were willing to be on the program, I did everything to say I'm going to do this if I have to be on a roof someplace in the middle of Minneapolis in 10-foot snow. So just welcome to the program tonight. You will not want to miss this program. It's going to be life-changing. And in the 5 years I've done this show, this is the one guest that I have been wanting and wishing and praying and dreaming about to be on the program. You can get involved tonight. You can actually talk to our guest this evening at 888-627-6008, or you can text at 832. Yes, this is my personal cell phone number, 832-396-6525, or you can get on Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page and chat there, and they can read that question later on into the program. I'm not going to do my preliminary fluff tonight, because I want to dedicate the entire hour to one of the people that I have looked up to, for sure, all of my adult life since his book came out. And my children literally had to read his books as a requirement in, I believe, seventh or eighth grade in Southern Illinois. And I don't know if our guest knows that. I'm not even telling you who the guest is until I kind of just, here's Johnny type thing. But it's just great. And I'm excited. So here we go. I'm going to forget all of my preliminaries and go right to the introduction. And this is the introduction of our guest tonight. As an individual who represents overcoming adversity, Dave has dedicated his entire life helping others to help themselves. As a former Air Force combat air crew member, Dave's job entailed mid-air refueling of the once highly secretive SR-71 Blackbird and the F-117 stealth fighter. While on active duty, Dave was selected as a California Volunteer of the Year. He has received personal commendations from 4 United States presidents. He was honored as one of the 10 outstanding young Americans, and later, listen to this, was the only American to be honored as the outstanding young person of the world. Dave is also the recipient of the National Jefferson Award, which is considered the Pulitzer Prize for public service. Other recipients include Sandra Day O'Connor and Colin Powell. Well, that's tough company there, I tell you what. He is the author of 9 inspirational books. His books have been on the bestsellers list for well over 13 years combined. A Child Called It alone has been on the New York Times bestseller list for over 6 years. Dave is the first author to have 4 number one international bestsellers and to have 4 books simultaneously on the New York Times bestseller list. Recently, he has served as a California fire captain in 2 separate districts. For nearly 10 years, he was deployed to the state's most horrendous fires. And from the bottom of my heart, it is the greatest honor since I have been doing this work to welcome to the program tonight, Mr. Dave Pelzer. Dave, come on in. Welcome to the show tonight. I salute you. I bow to you. And I am so honored to have you on the program. Welcome, my friend.
Well, again, Doc, as I said in the prelim, you obviously don't get out that much. And, you know, we were looking, and we'll do the stuff later, but a quick story. The book was going to be made into a possible movie, which they're still working on. And I got to meet a very extraordinary young lady and her beau, and he's an A-list star, very nice, they're a cute couple. And he actually said, you know, you're kind of like James Bond meets Jack Bauer. Because I'm always, like, I spend summers in Iraq doing comedy for the troops, or I'm always doing something, whatever. And I said, sir, one, we need to videotape this. And number two, I'm really, when I'm off duty, I'm so Mr. Magoo. I am just a regular boring guy. I mean, so I was doing outside work because I live in the Russian River area that you saw in the news. We had cyclone rivers and we had the earthquake a couple of days ago. And I'm cleaning up outside stuff and I stepped into dog matter. I'm saying that nicely. And I didn't know I stepped into the dog matter. And I have a two-story townhome. And of course, I went up and down the stairs in dog matter. And I, of course, I had to like do an emergency cleaning with the carpet. And then I'm on my Levi's and I'm going, oh my God, I've got a show in 2 hours. So it's not easy being me. It's pretty not easy being me. But I got to tell you, Doc, you know, and as I said before, we actually turned down a lot of requests because some of them are just kind of goofy. But the work that you are doing and the lifetime work that you have done, you know, it's generational. It's so generational. And I'm just, I know you're in Area 51 in an underground bunker because I already have a drone flying overhead. But thank you for all the work that you do, good sir. Thank you so much for allowing me to be on your show.
Well, I'll tell you, the honor is mine. And when I wrote my book several years ago, I think 5-6 years ago, matter of fact, I self-published. And I couldn't sell it to the publishers. I mean, nobody wanted it. And then finally, when I sold, I think a couple hundred thousand out of my living room, several publishers wanted me.
It's always
and
like
one
that.
One of them was HCI, and they called me, and they said, "Would you like to meet me, the couple people, at a place?" And they said, "We're the one that published Child Called It." Immediately when they said that, Dave, I said, "Hey, wait, I want to be with that publishing company." Wow. And I was just absolutely overwhelmed. And I don't even know if you remember because you're a big dog. I'm just a little flea. But you actually endorsed my book, and the paragraph that you wrote about my book, I have laminated and saved. It's like, I don't want to lose that anywhere. And you're probably having that. They're probably saying, because I publish that everywhere I can. Hey, wait, Dave recommended my book. Come on. But I just, I am just honored.
Well, and enough of, okay, the Oscar, I want to thank everybody for making me fantastic. So let's get to the meat of it, Doc, because remember, you're the Doc.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, the book, the new one that you've just written, this is the second half or the finale of the Child Called It?
Yeah, it's weird because there's a little bit of a backstory. I remember, as your audience probably knows, you know, I lived in the basement. I was horribly abused for many years, isolated and so forth. And I was growing up in the era that boys wanted to be firefighters, they wanted to be astronauts, or they wanted to do macho stuff. And me, I just wanted to live the life as a writer like John Steinbeck, Mice and Men. So I was, as a child, I survived in the basement, you know, reading of Treasure Island and adventure storybooks. And I never thought in my wildest dreams that I would be able to fly for the Air Force because they didn't take in foster kids. You know, at age 14, I was learning how to pronounce it without using my hands, for goodness sakes, because I wasn't allowed to speak for many years, swallow pneumonia twice in 24 hours, and it affects me even like right now. I have to just breathe a little bit differently. And when I got to join the Air Force, I was a swamp cook, like in the movie Papillon. And then I became a little commando jump paratrooper guy. And I could not believe I finally was able to fly for that weapon system, the SR-71. And my life, Doc, is chock full of adventures. And if your audience wants to write down a note, and I want them to write this down, this is important, is that you survive for a reason. You really survive for a reason. I've never met anybody, Doc, who says, I'm a victim of cancer. No, they say, you know, I fight cancer. And every day that I'm alive is a blessing. And because of my unfortunate situation, I've been allowed, you know, to hook and crook, basically, or crawl on glass. And the fact that A Child Called It was published, and here's a cute backstory a lot of people don't know. A Child Called It was given to my teachers on the exact day of my 20th anniversary of my rescue. The exact day. And you know, the first two books were dedicated to them.
Yeah.
And the book was printed like yours was. And no one wanted it because they thought it was too violent. And I said, no, this is Rocky Balboa. This is about resilience. You know, there's steps involved. You know, if you look at Maslow's hierarchy theory and its basic psychology, and you put yourself into the film. Because if you look at my writings, Doc, I feel like I'm a little bit of Christopher Nolan. You know, it's very visual. It's very graphic. There's a pace to it, and you become involved with the character. So we had A Child Called It, The Lost Boy, A Man Named Dave, and then I did a book that I thought would separate the trilogy called Privilege of Youth. It's about becoming of age and the 70s and, you know, meeting two young boys became my lifetime brothers. And I kind of thought, too, because I get the question, what about your mother? Why did she go crazy? What about your father? And I thought, what if I had a book that can just sum up everything? Because as you read now, Doc, now you know why my mom went completely crazy. There is no way in heck that my mom, even to this day, with all the training in psychology and medicine we have, she could have made it. Or why didn't your father do this or that? And then we painted the picture that my father was just a very gentle man that was horribly overwhelmed. And then, you know, I wanted to just kind of like put all the pieces together. And you still have, per se, a struggle in my character. Turning 60, and unexpectedly I lost a sibling, and unexpectedly I lost a beautiful bride. And then at the same time, we have something called COVID, which was not fake news. And as a firefighter, it was, I cannot begin to tell you how real it was. And then dealing with that, trying to move, working at two separate fire districts, 2 hours away. And I was 24/7, 7 days a week, but at the same time, slowing down, and I'm broadcasting to you in my beautiful townhome in the Russian River. So now I have four generations, and my grandson comes up here. My grandson I told you about, who was is my grandson pretty cool, by the way, Doc? Yeah, you better nod. Yeah,
absolutely.
I
want
to hear it. Yes. Is my grandson pretty cool, yes or no?
Absolutely.
The Steve McQueen of grandsons, right?
That's right.
So to kind of encapsulate Return to the River, I'm a hopeless romantic. Everything about me is romance, whether it's a cup of coffee, I downstairs have a fireplace, talking to you, having a glass of wine, praying, you know. And what I like about Return to the River, it puts all the pieces of the generation together, and it's kind of a haunting love story, if you really think about it. And I really think, too, it's a very gripping book. If I was a movie director, that would be my piece. I would direct that.
I agree, because you could go back, flashbacks, and come back to reality in the daytime. And as far as the firefighter stories that you have. And I think right out of the chute, when I was reading Return to the River, you mentioned something that resonated with me, because I think we have a lot of similarities. You may not want to have a lot of similarities with me, but we do in our life. Mine was more sexual abuse. Mine was all sexual abuse. But you mentioned something early in the pages, and I got the Kindle edition, about there was a masquerade that you was playing, that you had the mask on, and you wasn't really dealing with true reality. I want to go into that. How long did that last in your adulthood? And then how did you get through it? And then how often do you go back to that?
Well, you know, I call that what I call the face or the facade, because it's almost like, you know, and I use the firefighter as a metaphor in a sense. you know, because I've had some experiences doing the training, and eventually I was promoted to one of the or the local firefighter captain where I was living in Sea Ranch in Northern California. And you kind of have to have a face or a facade because you're seeing great people and their worst time of their lives, you know, so you kind of have to just shut it down in a sense, do your job as best as you can. And then you're working with crews, make sure that they're okay before, during, and after. And at the same time, you know, I kind of worked myself a little bit too much. So maybe I didn't have to deal with things. And I think what really was is that unexpected divorce to a beautiful lady that I'm still in love with. We were kind of separated only because she wanted to be down south in Southern California to be with her family and friends. But then, you know, 1 month turned into 2 years, 3 years, whatever. And it just, when it hit me, I was like, oh my gosh. Because I thought, oh no, when she comes back up, you know, we'll be the same and wrap things up and so forth. So I had a lot of things happen all at once, whether it was being tired from working at two separate districts, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, responding to multiple calls, packing and moving. I mean, folding my wife's undergarments or lingerie and shipping it to her. I'm like, what is this? You know, because you just stay busy and busy. And it's not one thing, but there's lots of little straws in a sense, whether people contemplate taking their life or doing harm to others or, you know, making their life, you know, a place, a den of misery. And I'm embarrassed about it. But at the same time, too, it makes me appreciate things more now, if that makes sense. And what I wanted to do with Return to the River, to me, it was just a tapestry of raw emotions and putting yourself into the book in a sense like, oh, Dave, I wouldn't have done that. Or Dave, why didn't you not do this? Because none of us are perfect, you know, and I really believe, too, because of COVID, we found out exactly who we were, you know, because there's a lot of people who are of service, a lot of people who might be scared, a lot of people in denial, or a lot of people that got very, very angry. But I will say this, because I love my country. I mean, no one could have had the blessings that I've had if I lived in another country. I was so proud that we didn't go past a tipping point because I was concerned that people would get very angry that they're under lockdown and you can't tell me what to do and I don't want to wear the mask or I don't want this and that. And I was afraid that there might be riots or violence involved. But for the most part, 99.9%, all of us just did what we had to do. We helped out our brothers and our families and our neighbors. And that in a time of crisis, either you come together or you know, you kind of blow apart. But and I have to tell you this, Doc, I'm not a good writer. Return to the River was my fastest project. 6 months. Usually it takes me to have 2.5 years. And it was an unexpected pregnancy in a sense. It really was. But I love the title. And if you look at the book, and here's some inside intel, I had that cover commissioned just for that book. And it represents the summer of 1966 that you read in the book was my favorite time with my family before my mom went completely bonkos. And it's a very romantic piece. The sun was setting. You've got the blue orange sky. And the water, the Russian River, is so quiet. You can hear ripples, though, and it's green. And I leaned back, and it was my mother, and I just jumped because I thought, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. And I'll never forget this, Doc. She pulled me into her chest, and I swear to goodness, I can feel her heartbeat. And I remember smelling her hair. And she said something nice to me, and that was, I've had two beautiful moments with my mom before we went crazy. And that, I knew then, at that moment, I'm going to move to the river. Because you also read in the book that I was going to run away at age 9 when they threw me out of the house. And I was going to crawl under the Golden Gate Bridge and go to this town that I can't even, I don't know the name or how to pronounce it. And I got as far as a mile and a half. And the police picked me up and says, oh, your parents must be so worried about you. And I was like a dog in the car going, whoa, no. And it was a lifetime dream, you know, to come here. And it's a small Cannery Row town. We just had our little Christmas parade last night. And what I love about in this town is during the day, or my heyday per se, you know, I donated lots of funds and raised millions for different causes. But I didn't know if I had a direct effect on that cause per se. But here, I can feed homeless people directly. I go to Costco. I can buy socks. You know, I can open up a door for someone and I know everybody at the supermarket or all the tellers at the bank. So it's a nice knit for me, because I'm very reclusive for obvious reasons, but it's a nice place to live for me. And my grandson just adores it, you know, because he's five now and he's the king of the castle, Doc.
Yeah, I bet he is. You know, I tell you, you mentioned there about COVID, and do you think one of the things that the pandemic did for us is that it all made us realize that we all have gone through something and we all may need help from other people. So we all have issues now. Everybody has issues, and it doesn't, mental illness to some extent is not, doesn't have the stigma I don't think it used to. What do you think about that?
I agree with you, because I have like a little podcast show, and I always say in every show, COVID humbled all of us, as it should, because we've all been affected by it in one way or another. We know people who have lost their lives or who are not the same. I had COVID three times, for God's sakes. I was exposed, and, you know, it was what it was. And but it's almost like, you know, again, I say the cancer thing. You know, because once you have this cancer, you're still going to have it. It might be dormant, and hopefully it doesn't come back. But it does. It's like surviving a car crash. Or in my case, Doc, every item I eat, I savor and enjoy. I don't care if it's a prime rib steak or Taco Bell. Or my big thing, and you saw it in Return to the River, when I was stabbed by accident, I thought, oh, my God, we're going to the hospital. I didn't care about the food. I didn't care about, oh, my God, this facade is over. My biggest thing was sheets. Remember that in the book? Clean sheets. And just about every Friday, it's called Flower Friday, that I go to the supermarket. I buy all these flowers. And then I always change my sheets on Friday just so I can, like, I like this. If I had Oprah money, oh, my goodness, I'd have clean sheets twice a day, for goodness sakes. But it's a perspective of appreciation. And I think a lot of people, particularly now, and I'm thankful that the election is over, a lot of people get so amped up over politics now, and that never happened before. There's a fear factor involved on COVID-20 or COVID-24. It's like the bad Terminator film. I'll be back, and you don't want me to be back, you know? But we have to kind of just settle down. And with my little show, I just say, you know, I'm very Robin Williams meets Will Rogers in a sense. It's like, just don't be overwhelmed of something you have no control over. When I was at Katrina, I was there for 3 weeks, and we couldn't move fast enough. And I told my team, I says, you know what we're doing? We're embracing the ocean. There's no way you can embrace the ocean. But if we move the scale 1 inch at a time, think about it, after 3 weeks, yeah, that's a good foot or two. So you just have to do, there's a blessing, Doc, and I do it at the end of my show. I say, do as much as you can for as long as you can and for as many as you can. And I believe, and I might be wrong, I think that's a Baptist prayer. And I just embrace those words, because the one thing about me, Doc, and I know I'm kind of skipping around a little bit, I believe in my heart that I am the most blessed person I know, that my higher power has blessed me at the right time, at the right place, the connection, and how it changed my life. Because as you know, and your audience probably knows, I thought my mother was going to kill me that Friday in March, because my brothers were going to visit my uncle and auntie's house. And my parents were separated. She was really going downhill fast. And I was at the point I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't allowed to eat. So my body was shutting down. I had no resistance. And to think about it, hours before I was going to spend the weekend with my mother, thinking I'm going to die, my teachers had enough. And I came into school in such a dire state, they called the police, and I was taken into immediate protective custody. And as you read in Return to the River, I interviewed my teachers before A Child Called It came out, because I want to make sure the timeline was good. I wanted to make sure that this was factual, or did I forget something? You know, I just wanted, you know, like you're doing the job as a journalist. And I'll never forget this, Doc. I saw Mr. Ziegler, my teachers, before the book came out. And my teacher took me out to dinner. And I was, at the time, you know, I was doing a lot of counseling in juvenile hall. So I was doing a lot of work. So I talked to the kids. And when he took me out, he said, son, do you know why we even called the police that Friday? And I said, no, sir, I don't remember. I don't. I remember what happened to me, but I don't remember why you guys just called the police. And we were sitting in a nice fancy restaurant, and there was people dancing, line dancing in the late or early 90s. You know, it was a big thing. And he told me why, and I'll never forget this, Doc. I dropped a fork, and it clattered, and it stopped everything. And he told me, you came into school, son, that day with no skin on your arms. And I remember I started crying, and he's crying. And he's a teacher. He's like the Clint Eastwood teachers. Excuse me, sir. And I remember saying, oh, my God, gray patches. Because that Thursday before I was rescued, my mom had doused my limbs in a mixture of ammonia and Clorox, and it burns the skin. And this was when, excuse me again, sir, that she would put the ammonia and Clorox in a bucket and throw me in the bathroom with this fixture. And the first time I didn't understand what was going on. But gas goes up, I had to learn to stay down. If she did this, I did that. But the problem was I didn't have a chance to rinse off the solution because I had to do all these chores. And that was the reason why they finally rescued me. And it was just saddened. I'm still saddened the fact that child abuse is not about just the pedophile, the perpetrator, and the child. But my siblings were exposed to my mother's madness. My father was a very gentle person, even though on the job, a very, you know, lean forward in the saddle firefighter, very courageous firefighter. And look at the kids at school. I'm stealing their lunches. Before I was rescued, Doc, kids used to regurgitate when I entered the room. And look with the teachers. Mr. Ziegler told me, he says, we would meet at the meeting room for the teachers, the teacher's lounge. And they said half the time the teachers would cry. The ones that didn't know me thought, okay, he's a food thief. He's a terrible child. He's a troublemaker. But the ones who knew me were very emotionally attached. And I'll say something else, Doc. You know, I've met a few people. You know, I've been blessed. You know, you go to the White House or you meet a celebrity or, you know, whatever. And that's very, very nice. But my biggest celebrity photo is a photo of the 20-year anniversary in which I gave them the book, and all my teachers were there. And I'm very proud of that. I act a little affable. I'm kind of a funny guy, but I'm very serious about being of service. That makes sense.
That absolutely makes sense. I tell you what, we're going to take our commercial break now, because on the other side of this, Dave, I really want to find out from you and drill deep inside and go a little deeper with you about, do you think things happen to you for a reason?
Yes.
So you can be able to use it to impact other people in a positive way. And we're going to talk about that. And I also want to kind of have you just on the other side of this break through a nutshell. If somebody hasn't by chance glanced through Child Called It, and then I want to find out how this river book takes it to the end of the story. So we're going to find out all about that. 888-627-6008. If you want to talk to our guest tonight, Dave Pelzer. And we'll be right back after this short commercial break.
Get ready for a life-changing journey. From the best-selling author of Shattered by the Darkness and When the Dark Clouds Come, Dr. Gregory Williams is back with his highly anticipated third book, Embracing Your Scars, learning how to turn life's pain into life's power and purpose. Have you ever wondered how to transform your struggles into strength? Do you want to stop hiding behind the pain, the heartache, and instead learn how to turn those scars into the very fuel that propels you towards greatness? If you do, then this book is for you. In Embracing Your Scars, Dr. Williams shows you how to take the negative experiences of your past and turn them into the very source of your future success. Don't miss out, because your transformation begins here. The book is available soon on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever great books are sold.
Well, Welcome back. I'll tell you what, we have an excellent guest this evening, Dave Pelzer, that has just written a new book, Return to the River. Dave, how long has this book been out, this newest one?
I think last March, and it was, the publishers were very nice. And I started with ACI years ago, of course. And then I went on to other publishers because I wanted to do a hardback, and they didn't do hardbacks at the time. And I thought, wouldn't it be nice after, you know, all the journey to come back to HCI, because I was offered, you know, some other publishers wanted me because of the success of the books. And I thought, you know what, I want to go back home. And the retired president, he offered me like an advance. And I said, no, I don't want the advance. And I scared him. He says, well, okay, go to your other publisher, Dave. We tried. I said, no, sir. I said, I'm just turning down the advance. I don't want it. I don't need it. And of course, it's during COVID. I said, I don't think it's proper, you know, because I'm kind of a different agent, Doc. I do things my own little way. And sometimes people don't like, why is he so nice? I'm going, I don't have to explain if I'm nice. But if you're not nice, I am definitely not nice. But it was very nice to go back to the publisher Return to the River. And out of all the writings, you know, because if you look at A Child Called It, it was written by an 8-year-old boy. It's very fast-paced, it's very graphic, and it's very visual, because that's how little boys think. And then we did the second book, The Lost Boy. I said, okay, the premise is, what happens when there's an alien who lived in a basement, and now he's suddenly, you know, amongst you, and I don't speak the language literally, and I don't hold any currency, per se, any mental coin. And then it was a beautiful story on how the social services and foster care put this child back together. And then with a man named Dave, you know, the scope was bigger about becoming a parent, serving your country, and the ups and downs of life, in a sense. So what I wanted to do with the Turn to the River is have a more mature voice, still keep the action going, and painting a nice Monet, you know, figure, in a sense. And at the same time, you know, exposing, you know, vulnerabilities, exposing, you know, like we talk about, the facade, the mask. And then finally, like just looking at yourself psychologically, logically, and accepting, okay, this is my path. Because again, Doc, I never thought in a million years that I would speak, let alone speak in public, or do a comedy show in Iraq, for God's sakes. Robin Williams would have been, oh my God, he's too much, he's too fast, I can't keep up with this man, okay. Or you know, flying for the Air Force, or, you know, the blessing of having a son, and the blessing within a blessing, you know, they named their son in part after me. And as you know, so life is unexpected. And I say this again and again, you know, I've been very blessed, but I do believe that certain things happen at certain times in one's life. When I age 8, Doc, and for those who don't know me, my mother was very, very sick. And for whatever reason, you know, she targeted me. We call it target child selection. Eeny, meeny, miny, hey, mo. And I was selected at a very young age, at age 3, if not a little bit younger. And she was very controlling, and one thing led to another, and I was abused. And I remember, like, at age 8, and that's very important psychology, because that's 90% of your inner self. How do you see yourself in the world? How you think the world sees you? I want to be a ballet dancer. I want to be an astronaut. I want to be a teacher. You start to formulate these ideas. And at age 8, she premeditated to burn my arm on a gas stove, which she did. And she wanted me to lay down on the gas stove and physically burn for her. And I had to figure out very quickly, I don't want to die, so fight or flight. And I came up with an idea. I'd rather have her hit me than burn me, because I knew my brothers would come home from their Boy Scout meeting in less than 10 minutes. And by the grace of God, my brother came home from 4:05. She picked me up and threw me down the stairs, because at age 8, that's where I reside, in the basement. And I remember I put on my clothes as best as I could. And for the first time, Doc, I purged. I cried. You know, like I would say, oh, I'm trying to be a good boy. You know, I try to do all the chores on time. I try not to look at her. I try not to steal that much food. And I realized at age 8, the turning point was, I can't change my exterior environment. Mom is crazy. My mommy is gone. My beautiful mommy is gone. She's possessed by this demon. And I realized, you know what? I'm going to have to do something for myself. So what I did, Doc, it was kind of like that Cub Scout thing. I had blisters from the palm of my hand all the way down to my bicep. And I just raised my arm And I promised myself, I vowed to myself, from this moment on, I will not quit. From this moment on, I'm going to give everything my best shot. And that's when I started to think, okay, if she doesn't feed you, steal food. When she attacks you, roll up into a ball. And it was kind of like that vow, that one changing thing led to this, that led to that. And everything that happened to me, even when I was stabbed at age 9 by accident, that was not premeditated. The wound was in my chest area. And 2 days later, it was very infected. And I knew she wasn't going to take me to the hospital. So I had to basically squeeze the pus out. And I remember crawling back to the basement, to the base of the basement stairs. And I just remember I just allowed myself to fall asleep. And I didn't dream a lot back then because I was so scared of her catching me. I was always, my radar was always on full tilt. And I remember I had this beautiful dream when I was flying through the air. See, a lot of kids, Doc, as you know, they want to fly away from danger or they fly away to a safety zone. If you look at our Marvel comics, which I think is so, they've done such a great job for our kids, you know, because it's, you know, it's on the inside that matters. You might be kind of weird on the outside, but they want to do justice and do good things. And my favorite character, my superhero, of course, was Superman. In psychology, I learned this years ago, they call it the Clark Kent effect. Clark Kent is a geek. He's not masculine. He's clunky. He, you know, he wears the silly little glasses. He's overly polite, whatever. But on the inside where no one can see, boom, he's stronger than all of us. He believes truth, justice, and all that good stuff. And he wants to serve. So it's nice that we have, you know, heroes within heroes. And what I like about being as old as I am now, you know, I can say what I want because I mean what I say. And if I make someone upset by saying, Miss, ma'am, or sir, that's okay. This is my side of the street. Get out. And I love being of service. And my program, Doc, I do 3 good deeds a day. I try to make people laugh 3 times a day. And I'm always doing something. I'm always very, very, very busy. And this is because, you know, I know what it's like, Doc, to be less than zero. I know what it's like when you're invisible, you know, that you're less than nothing. And now I've been blessed to become a father and now a grandfather and to live an amazing life. And I've been very lucky. But I do believe, too, it's what you do with your luck that counts. I never sold out. You know, I've always tried to be my best. I've made a million mistakes, but I know my heart, one, what is true, and I know my heart is pure. And that's because, again, it goes back to those, you know, those the first 12 years of my life. I don't take a lot of things for granted, Doc. That's why I was so thrilled to come on the show, you know. And believe me, after the show, I'll probably cry a little bit. I'll pray. But I'm definitely going to have a nice glass of wine. So, again, you're in the underground bunker of Area 51. I'm not supposed to reveal that. I don't know why I'm doing it, but you know, it is what it is. But what I like about my life is people who look at me, they don't even know who I am, which is nice. But the fact that I just give a little to make other people feel value, and I think that's so important in this day and age, sir.
You know, it seems like there's few and far between in that area right now, and I'm hoping that when people see your life over the years and this type of interview and you sharing your humble heart, that it will indicate that that's the way that people ought to go. We shouldn't have to learn how to give of ourselves by walking through hell first, because that's what we both had gone through. But there is a servant heart that is developed or crafted out of that heat of being in the fire. And I'm not for sure what causes that, but I'll give until it hurts. And I have a feeling you like to be of service to the greatest degree, too. And I just wonder if there's something because of what we've gone through that causes us to do.
You know, I really don't know. In my life, I didn't plan it. I mean, I desperately, when I was in foster care, I wanted, because when you're a child, you think 4 years is forever. I'm like, oh my God, I took a nap. That was 4 years ago. But I remember I was so desperate to join the armed forces, and I loved planes and, you know, that whole flying thing. And again, I was just lucky to get into that and lucky to get into this. And I had to fight for it because, one, air crew members are very special, enlisted air crew members. It's a different cadre per se. And I was a swamp cook, and they didn't want me to go into jump school, airborne school, because, well, you're a cook, you're stupid. Okay, whatever. And I would study. You know, I take college classes on math. I had to take pre-algebra 4 times because I just didn't understand it. And the fact, too, when I was in foster care, I would work 20 to 40 hours a week in junior high. And then in high school, I'd work 40 to 60 hours every week. So I thought, oh, school's slowing me down. So I made a lot of stupid choices because back then the stigma was, oh, foster kids don't graduate high school. Foster kids, college. I thought college was blue blood. I really did. So I thought, I don't want to be homeless like my father was when he retired from the fire department. He was homeless, which broke my heart and affects me to this day, which is one of the reasons why maybe I try to have compassion when I see people. I run around, and when I buy lunches once a month, I got to drive around the city. I know who's what, where, how, whatever, and I got to make sure they have a nice sandwich and 3 bags of potato chips, 2 things of water, mustard packs, and mayo packs. If you're feeding homeless people, give them mustard, mayo, and lots of napkins, ladies and gentlemen. You got to, you know, you just finite this thing. But because of my experiences, and I know where I came from, and that's so important. That's why I said again, COVID humbled us. Don't forget that, how you felt when you were under lockdown. I remember I took out my firefighters when COVID was just starting to ease up. I took them to a nice local restaurant on the Russian River, and it's on a golf course. It's just a mom and pop place. But the fact that I took in the breakfast and I said, no talking, eat your breakfast slowly and just look, guess what? We're outside. And they're like, oh my God, that's right. I'm going, see, we get to do that as firefighters. But, and then imagine too, I remember Tom Cruise, he's a very smart businessman. They had the Top Gun Maverick movie. And the smartest thing that Mr. Cruise did before he showed the film, he's in Levi's, and you can tell he's tired. He was so tired because he's always, when he releases a film, he's in production immediately for another film. And he said, by the way, folks, I thank you for coming to the theaters, because Paramount, like everybody else, wanted to stream, because they needed that money back. And he fought like heck because he's the main producer of his film production company. And he said, I want to thank you for waiting to see the film. We made a great film for you. You're going to love it. Thank you. Bless you. And I thought, oh, my God, it's a sense of appreciation. And sometimes you have to lose things. You lose things, whether there's a death in the family or maybe there's a medical situation or an accident. Or in my case, you know, I lost a beautiful bride that I just still love to this very day. And I, you know, I can be very cold and heartless. I know I can. But if I do that, then I turn per se like to the dark side. And at my age, my biggest thing is I like to relax and I like to sleep. And I made a decision. I'm going to be a very good person and talk excellent about my former wife. And I never expected it, but I now see it with time and tide involved. So maybe I didn't appreciate that the marriage at the time as much as I should have. You know, I was working way too hard, you know, and I wasn't getting enough sleep, whatever. But bottom line for me is you have to look at where you're at now and think about how did I get there? And with me, it's always been, you know, kind of like a Mission Impossible thing. At the last second, boom, you know, the bomb didn't go off or we saved the day per se. And that's why I always say, again, I'm the most blessed person that I know because I study people, Doc. I study Robin Williams, Harry Truman, you know, Abe Lincoln, people like Timothy McVeigh, for God's sakes, Mussolini, Saddam Hussein, you know, Mr. Hitler, because I'm always a psychological voyeur. I'm looking for what was the trigger that you went left or right or up or down. And there's usually something there. But in my case, I'm at the age where, you know, I only have so much time and energy. And this is important for your audience. If you're over 40, how many more summers do you have left in your life to do anything that you want? And when you go to bed upset, you're not going to sleep. You're going to wake up upset. And if you're this mad, it's going to grow like a cancer and it consumes your soul and it consumes your outlook on life. I'd rather be the overly affable, geeky Clark Kent guy, but knowing the inside, you know, I still got a little bit left.
Yeah. Do you feel that people that have gone through adversity, trauma, anxiety, abuse, have a different outlook on work and work ethic and absolutely working yourselves to death. Because I'm one of those that I don't
Definitely affects
like to
you.
Not work.
Yeah, it definitely affects you. And you have a choice. And I'll say this as nicely as possible because I don't want to step on toes, but I'm obligated to tell you the truth as I know it. You have to choose. You have to choose. What did Henry Ford said? He said, whether you do or you don't, you've decided. So you have to choose your happiness, or you can be the victim mentality and never give. I mean, you're losing life. That's why I try to say you survive for a reason, and you survive to be happy. Okay, get it. If you're going to get a tattoo, I survive to be happy. There's your tattoo, ladies and gentlemen, right there. That's your mantra, for goodness sakes. And it just kills me, Doc, when people come up and they tell me their story, and I know how it's going to end, whatever. And I'm so, one guy, Doc, and I don't want you to cry because I'm about to cry myself. I'm doing this massive book signing, and there's a very nervous gentleman in the back jumping up and down. And I did Q&A. And he says, oh, I want you all to hear my story. And we all look at this guy like, okay, bring it. He says, my father, I'm sorry, Doc, I'm getting emotional. My father yelled at me once for 10 seconds. He's been dead for 20 years, but he's still yelling in my head. What do I do? Two words, David. I wanted to be Clint Eastwood, grow up. But I said, sir, two words, be happy. Three words, David, give me three words. Grow up now. But I said, you know, be happy now. Be happy now, damn it, be happy. It's a choice. And I got to tell you, I'm as human as everybody else. A few hours ago, I had a situation. I had to clean my carpets because I soiled them. I was outside doing some work after the Cyclone River. We had 12 inches of rain in 12 hours, Doc. Unbelievable. We were flooding left and right. So before I was doing the show, I'm going, oh, my God, I've got soiled carpets. I got to clean them. And I got a shower in shape. And I put on good cologne and I brushed my teeth, Doc, just for you, baby. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm just a regular guy in an irregular world. But I choose that. Every day, Doc, every day, I pray. And when I pray, when I have food, I said, use this to nourish my body so I may be of service. My last prayer after I pray for my big prayer list, whatever, I say, please use me. Give me one more good mission. But know how appreciative I am to be on this planet at this time, at this day, in this lifetime. So you have to kind of work on your happiness. And mental health, as you know, Doc, more than I do, that's going to be the biggest thing for the next 20 years minimum, in part because of COVID. You know, whether you're affected by it or under the lockdown or people. I saw a lot of people getting really crazy. It's like, okay, calm down. Take a deep breath. It's okay. But it is a choice for me every single day. I work a lot with people that are new into program, whether it's drugs or alcohol. And I've learned more from them than any college class or just me babbling in my in-service training. And it's basically one day at a time. That's why I try to work my program every single day, doing good deeds. And sometimes I don't feel good, Doc. Sometimes I'm kind of unhappy. And that's normal. You don't have to be Robin Williams and Bubble 24/7, for goodness sakes. And all I do is I have a program. I just go outside and I breathe. Or I'm living under these gigantic redwood trees. You know, or I think, you know what? You think you're having a bad day, Pelzer? Guess what? Go to Yemen. Go to Syria. Go to Detroit. Or go to Oakland. Yeah. You know, what did Clint Eastwood say? Get busy living or get busy dying, boy. And I choose to be of service and to be happy. That's my choice.
Yeah, and that's great. I think a lot of people, I think even depression is a choice to some people. I mean, obviously, there's chemical balances, things of that, and mental disorders. But I believe a lot of times once we make a choice and we start swaying that way and we start feeding and putting input,
you're
going to cause the output.
You're ingesting, you know, you're swallowing this. And that's why if you look at what I said about at age 8, I purged. I psychologically, physically threw up. And when you physically throw up, you know, some people throw up like, oh, it's dirty, it's gross. Okay, guess what? When you get it out of your system, you take a shower, you wash your clothes. And half the time, hey, I want some cheesecake, okay? And I want a double burger with fries and extra mayonnaise. Thank you very much. You know, because when you solve one problem, God gives you another. And that's just my son. Oh, my God. Dad, I didn't know. One time he called me. Doc, you got to help him out. One time he called me. He says, Dad, work is hard. I'm like, I did not know. Dad, marriage is not fun. I did not know. And he called me one time and says, Dad, I've changed his diaper 7 times today. I'm going crazy. I'm going, welcome to parenthood. Thank you very much. Click. Drop that mic.
I tell you what.
One day at a time, man.
Yeah, absolutely. In the last minute that we have, Dave, I want to make sure that people know how to get a hold of this Return to the River. Because if you have read The Child Caught It, even if you haven't, and millions of people have read that, I recommend this highly as an addition or a standalone, obviously. What's the best way for them to get their hands on
Return to the River? It's in any bookstore you go to, Amazon, whatever. It's like COVID. It's everywhere. God, I'm plugging COVID. I can't believe that.
I'll tell you what, in the last minute that we have with our guests, with our audience, what is something that you'd like for them to hear from you if you only had 30 seconds to share?
I say it over and over. You survived for a reason, and you survived to be happy. But you have to do it every day. Everybody wants Mount Everest. They want Trump Lotto right now. They want success right now. No. Break things down to little goals that you can achieve every single day. Like, again, 3 kind deeds a day. You know, just open up your heart a little bit every day. But be happy and be happy now. And remember, that's your choice.
Fantastic. I tell you what, taking those steps forward, even if they're small steps, is still going forward.
Yes, sir.
Dave, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being on here tonight. Thank you so much. I'd love to have you back sometime. And if you ever need somebody on your show, call me. I'll do that any day of the week. Boom.
Well, we got to get you out of that underground bunker in Area 51, Doc. But I got to say this in closing moments, and I mean this. I want to thank you for all your works. And again, your works are kind of like my works, but yours is better. You're a doc. I'm just some old guy blabbling, for God's sakes. But it's a blessing. The works that you do and the lives that you've changed. And I'm very proud of you, Doc. I truly, truly am. And I would love to do another show with you. And we can either do comedy or just be more specific on certain things if you want. And I pray that your audience can take some of these notes and apply them in their life. So thank you for the honor, Doc. And my blessings to your family and to you and your audience. A happy, happy holidays to everyone.
Well, thank you, Dave. It's been an honor. And we will have you back on. I will contact and see what we can reschedule. I'd love to hear your comedy. I love to laugh. So I can't wait to hear your comedy show. That'd be great. I'd love to have you on just to do that and find out the impact of what joy and laughter can do.
Yes. I sometimes crack myself up. I'm like, oh my God, I can't. I write down notes. Oh, that was a good joke. What joke? I forgot I'm getting old. Okay, who's this guy? I don't know him. But hey, have a great time, and God bless you, Doc, and your staff.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it so much. And thank you again. Return to the River. Get this. It's almost a money-back guarantee. You will enjoy
it. It is a good book. I'm proud of it.
Yes, it is.
And thank you, Doctor.
Thank you so much. As we do each and every night on Sunday night when we close, always want to end with something, no matter what you're going through. No matter what you're into right now, no matter what you're fixing to face tomorrow, there's always hope. And as Dave said, from his very own breath, it's your choice sometimes to choose to look for it. If you want to find darkness, you want to find misery, you want to find anxiety, oh, it's there. All you have to do is make a choice to walk that direction. But every now and then, it'd be nice to walk towards the sunshine instead of away from it. But there's always, always hope. And also, you're never alone. Get the book, Return to the River, by Dave Pelton. Good night. God bless. And we'll see you next week. And you will not want to miss one of the world-renowned grief experts. She'll be on the program next Sunday night live. God bless. Good night. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1, for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.